This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Coast to Coast podcast here on Inside Carolina, InsideCarolina.com. I'm your host, Joey Powell. With me, as always, are the two minds that make this podcast work, Sherelle McMillan, Sean Moran. Boys, what's going on?
How you doing, Joey?
I'm good, man. Real, how you doing? How the fruit snacks?
How are they? They're good. That's the pregame. That's the pre-podcast tradition. Glad to have you. I'm doing pretty well.
Yeah, man. And if those of you who are tuned in to see John Siegley, look, John is freaking talented, and he's actually producing all of the podcasts for Inside Carolina. So they wanted to cut him a break and allow him to go grind on that for a little bit. So you're stuck with me. But hopefully, like I was telling the boys before we signed on, hopefully I won't sink the ship and we can kind of keep it moving in the right direction anyway. But now that we've got the intros out of the way, I definitely want to make sure that you guys and ladies who are listening and watching this, take a second, stop, rate us, review us on whether it's, you know, Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Winamp, Napster, Kazaa, whatever it is that you're listening to us on. How's that for a throwback?
Yeah, it's good.
Take a second to stop and go rate and review the show so that we can find out who's listening, how you like it. And it also helps us get to the top of those algorithms that allow us to show up sooner when people are looking for Carolina sports stuff. And finally, before we get rolling, I want to give a major shout out to our friends at Johnny T-Shirt. They sponsor this show. They sponsor all the Inside Carolina podcasts. They're huge sponsors of the website as well. Look, brand new, I got info. Johnny T-Shirt right now, in times of COVID, are here for you, the Inside Carolina listener subscriber. They are now doing door pickup at their store on Franklin Street. If you want to swing by there, you don't even have to deal with the parking. Just hit the little, you know, the little pickup lane, do the flashers thing, run in, grab it, pick it up. Don't even have to worry about the parking ticket, the feed in the meter, none of that stuff. They'll always deliver to you. They have great shipping. Turnaround times have always been great, at least for me and for folks that I know that have shot from Johnny T-Shirt. They also have really popular Carolina Argyle masks right now. In these times of COVID, in these times of pandemic, you got to mask up, right? Well, Johnny T-Shirt's got you with an Argyle mask that if you look on the website, it really, really looks good. So be sure you take care of Johnny T-Shirt. They've been taking care of us for a long time. And we want to make sure that we're showing them some love, you know, and shop local. I mean, it's just the right thing to do, right? Speaking of shopping, moving, shaking, all of those things that's going on. Boys, what's new since the last time we did a Coast to Coast podcast? I know it's not the typical August that we're used to seeing. Rel, I'm going to hit you first. What do you have new that's on the radar?
Well, we're going to get to the new offer that actually happened last night, but it was announced this morning to 2022 Dylan Anderson, who is a face-up four, 7-footer out of Arizona. But we'll talk about him in a little bit. I think, to me, one of the more interesting things is that North Carolina's backup, I would call them backup targets at the guard positions, are slowly kind of drifting away. So there was Angelo Brizzi, who we talked about. I feel like we talked about him for the entire month of June, who committed to Villanova. Wade Taylor is another guy who just announced his top five. Carolina wasn't included, mostly because it didn't offer. So really, that we know of, the only backup out there or secondary target is Carter Witt, who's out of Raleigh. And, you know, he just doesn't do much media or interviews, so we don't really know how much UNC is talking to him. So there's a scenario where right now Hunter Salas really is, you know, it for UNC, and the only possible backup target that's known is Carter Witt. So to me, that's been very interesting since the last time we talked, that these secondary targets are kind of moving on and UNC isn't offering.
Yeah, that is a big development or set of developments. Sean, what do you know? What do you think about Hunter Salas being kind of the guy that's getting the emphasis put on him right now?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about him a lot. Both Sherelle and I are big fans. Would love to see him in Carolina Blue. I know this past week, Kentucky offered him. So, and I think today he announced a top 12. So I know he had, you know, behind the scenes, Carolina's definitely been recruiting him hard, and they've gotten, you know, an early jump on him. But once again, with Kentucky entering the mix, still kind of a 12-team race, you know, you're putting, you know, what seems like all your eggs in one basket almost. Now, obviously, there's DeMarco Dunn, but he's not, I wouldn't say, really going to help handle the ball too much. You know, then you have Harrison Ingram, who could be that extra ball handler. But once again, you know, his final, you know, I think it was five or six, but really final four. Once again, that's kind of another crapshoot. So they're kind of rolling the dice right now. So it'll be interesting to see if one of those comes through. I think if you land another one, a lot of weight comes off everybody's shoulders. But if you miss on one or two, it gets pretty tight real quick.
And props to you, Sean, because we were talking about this kind of same scenario. I guess, man, the last one we did was 3 weeks ago, maybe. Yep. We were talking about the same scenario. I was like, well, Harrison Ingram isn't coming to Carolina. And, you know, I don't see the fit and blah, blah, blah. Turns out, you know, the kind of positional pitch that UNC gave him was much different than we had originally thought. So it's been a week, so we can talk about it. So they see him in more of a kind of point, I don't say point forward, but a guy whose utility and versatility they can use a bunch of different ways. And you had mentioned that, well, you know, if they're not able to get Salas and it's just RJ Davis and Anthony Harris and Leaky Black, then Harrison Ingram could come in and he could almost be the de facto, you know, kind of backup point guard because he has those kind of ball skills. And the UNC staff compared him to Theo Pinson. And we know that functionally in 2017, Pinson was the primary facilitator. So props to you, Sean, because I hadn't thought about that. And then talking to, you know, some folks around Harrison, talking to his dad, that's kind of what came to light. So maybe it's more that, you know, Harrison Ingram is almost one of those, could be considered one of those backcourt secondary targets almost. Like if you get him, you kind of cover yourself with two positions.
I think, you know, Theo Pinson, I guess when we were chatting, he didn't even come to mind because going back to that year, he really was, you know, you had Joel Berry, who was a shooter, scorer, even though he was the one bringing the ball up the court. It was really Theo Pinson who was the one that had the best vision and best passing on that team. So I guess that makes more sense. I know we were kind of debating, you know, we know how he plays in AAU in high school with the ball in his hands. He's a good passer, kind of lets the game come to him before he starts scoring. But at 6'7", you know, where did he fit in the Carolina offense on the perimeter? So I think that, you know, that comparison makes sense. And once again, now I guess you have Salas and Ingram in terms of secondary ball handlers, at least right now in the fold.
And then, you know, we talked about RJ Davis too. A lot of people say he's like kind of a slider, smaller Joel Berry. So, I mean, it starts to fit a little bit. You can see the plan maybe that it's in the coaching staff's head. Okay, we have a dynamic scorer who maybe we want to unleash him to score and not have him, you know, always worry about distributing and doing those kind of things. So, I mean, the comparison's there, and I see why they made that pitch. Now, whether or not it resonates, we'll see. But I think it's a good pitch and one that kind of surprised me, to be honest.
I love that you guys both mentioned that, because I think on the last episode, the thought was that, you know, because we don't know how UNC is pitching to Ingram, you know, the comment I think one of you guys said was, we really like what he does in so many different areas. But now the fact that you've got a little bit of source material that shows, yeah, UNC is considering him as kind of a, you know, a four and a point. Let me ask you guys this. When did you ever think that UNC basketball would be looking at a guy like that, specifically potentially running the ball? You know, Leaky, I think, fits that a little bit. But y'all take off on that.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever – I guess I'll take that back. So I feel like they were very rigid in what they did from when Roy got there, probably through around 2015 to 2016. I would say 2016 to me is when things started to change. That was the class that really suffered maybe more than any from the NCAA stuff. I think that's still the most offers he's ever given one class. He's like 24 or 25 offers. And you started to see them. It maybe was what Luke May was doing in practice because that changed things. But you started to see them offer more of the combo forwards and the kind of hybrid forwards and the guys who wanted the ball in their hands, but were also 6'9", you know, kind of what the NBA is moving to.
Yep.
So maybe 2016, kind of is when it changed, and now you see that each class they've really gone hard after those kind of jumbo wings, for lack of a better term, the Brandon Ingram types. They really have gone after them, even though one, they don't have a great track record of signing them, and two, maybe sometimes the fit isn't the best at UNC with those type of guys, but they're still pursuing them. So I think it's partly a reflection on where basketball is going and an acknowledgement that you can play the way you want to play and still win a lot of games, but maybe to win a championship, you're going to have to switch things up every once in a while. It doesn't have to be full time, but just maybe you have to go 15 or 18 minutes playing a different style than maybe, 15 years ago, you would have played 40 minutes the same style.
Sean, do you think it's fair to call this like the LeBron or the Kawhi effect, where you've got, these bigger guys, like Sherelle called them, the jumbo wings, kind of facilitating everything and handling the ball? Do you think that's something we'll see more of at UNC moving forward?
Yes and no. I mean, I don't think right off the bat, down the road, obviously with Leaky being a guy that kind of in high school, he was, I remember him Adidas, Adidas camp, AAU, he was playing point guard pretty much the whole time and he wanted the ball in his hands. And then, he's still operating as kind of a de facto ball handler. So there you have a guy 6'7". But I mean, I think in general, the guys are going to want to have their ball in their hands, and the bigs are going to be, wanting to shoot. And I think a lot of teams have adapted to that. And just to go back to Ingram for a second, I mean, when you look at Stanford and Purdue, two schools in his top list, they're the ones telling him, hey, you come in, the ball's going to be in your hands right off the bat. So he's getting that full pitch just because they don't really have as many guys, there. Compared to Carolina, that will have a few waiting. So it's a little bit different where they're saying you come in and be the man with the ball versus Carolina. So in terms of the jumbo wings, I think Carolina will obviously stay towards that traditional 6'4 to 6'6 type of wing that, you don't really need to handle the ball a whole lot. But I think when you do have that guy with Theo or an Ingram that can handle the ball, is just an added bonus.
Awesome, good insight, man. I appreciate that. So Sherelle mentioned a little bit earlier, and I want to dive into it a little bit and let you guys kind of give your insight onto this guy. I'm really upset that his name isn't pronounced Dylon, because I really want to make a Chappelle Show joke, but Dylan Anderson. Rel, what can you tell our listeners about him?
I have to be careful because some of this stuff is going to be in the story either tomorrow or Wednesday. So try and be careful. But I think the main thing to think about with him is that he's a big. He is kind of a face-up four. Again, just going back to what we were talking about of UNC kind of switching things up. People would say, he had Jawad Williams and he had Luke May, but between those two, there really wasn't much of anything close to what you would call,
list.
Right. Yeah. There wasn't much. I mean, Marvin was there, but he was there with Jawad. So, I mean, there wasn't much of stretch four anyway. since then, that is something that is in their toolkit to recruit. And that's what Anderson, and his family consider him is a stretch four. I think what the big thing about the offer is that Armando Bacot, Walker Kessler, and De'Ron Sharpe, there's a very small chance that they're there as seniors and juniors, which would be when Anderson, who is in 2022, would come in. So I think what you're going to see is North Carolina is going to need multiple big men, two, maybe three, depending upon who leaves this year and who they sign. So I think him as a four, I think you'll see a true five offered. You probably see more of a brutish type four offered. But I think it's just the first kind of the opening salvo of Roy's offers when it comes to bigs. And to me, that's the big takeaway, is they're going to need multiple guys. And so even though people see that he's from Arizona and, he's from the West Coast, there's an automatic assumption that, you know, he's going to go to Arizona because that's where he's from. But it doesn't hurt to throw your hat in the ring, especially when you're going to need multiple guys. And I think that's what this offer says.
Yeah, it's ironic, and I want to make sure our listeners and our viewers are understanding this. This is a 2022 kid. You know, most of the guys we've been talking about earlier are potential 2021s. This is a 2022 kid. Sean, what do you know about his game?
So for 2022, he's the fourth player that UNC has offered, first, true big man. And I guess, you know, I feel like, you know, watching these NBA playoffs and hearing the positions, I just don't know what a position means anymore.
That's fair.
Hearing a stretch four, in my mind, like he's never going to be a stretch four. Offensively, he'll be on the perimeter, but defensively, like, are you going to have him trying to guard a 6'7", you know, wing? Probably not. But that being said, I haven't seen him in person, but have been able to watch some tape. And for a guy being 7 foot as a rising junior, he moves, you know, he's not a freak athlete, but he definitely has some coordination. He's really, you know, really skinny, but he definitely looks like he has the ability to put on probably a good 20 to 30 pounds, I would say, over the next few years. Has the ability to shoot, has a kind of a very fluid jump shot. I think for him right now, more comfortable in the post. Right hand hook, up and under, et cetera. Can't get pushed around. I was watching some of his AAU clips from last year, and he was getting, you know, pushed around a little bit in the post. But I think that's common just for somebody that big right now. But once again, runs the floor pretty well. Agility-wise, you know, not amazing. But anytime he was on a pick and roll, even if the guard got by him, he could kind of, you know, time the shot block pretty well. So I really liked what I did see from him. And I do think there's a lot of room for him to grow. From a basketball perspective, I don't think the comparison makes perfect sense, but in terms of just how he looked, for some reason, the name Eric Chenoweth was popping in my head back from Roy's, like 98, 99 Kansas squad. And I was looking him up, and he was listed as a senior as 7'2", 270. So obviously had a lot of weight, but I would imagine when he was in high school, he was probably, you know, kind of a similar
more build. Slight.
So I don't think he had the outside game that he did, but you know, in terms of how he looked and moved, it took me about 5 to 10 minutes to kind of the name to come in my head. And then I started watching some 99 Kansas Kentucky games, but it should be a good one. And I think for him, he's rated number 62 by 24/7. So right now, Jaden Bradley, they haven't really offered those top 10 guys. So it seems like they're being pretty selective with who they are throwing those first offers out to.
Yeah, appreciate the breakdown of his game. I love the Eric Chenoweth reference. That's a pretty deep cut. I love that.
Once again, it could be completely wrong, but just the body type and height, it was triggering my memory. So we'll see.
But it does seem like hearing you guys talk about a lot of these younger players, especially where it's a face-up four, traditional five, the kids that are like 7 foot at that early of a stage, they all seem very, very rail thin. Like they all, you know, and I guess just anatomy and growth spurts and stuff, but it seems like he's just another one of those, like you said, that's probably got to put some beef on if he wants to not get slung around the AAU circuit.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like he was already, you know, had some strength to him, so I could see him doing that pretty easily. But once again, your center of gravity, especially if you're going against, you know, a football tight end, they're just going to push you off the block. But, you know, for him, he could catch from three and, you know, pull up a little bit. So I know we've talked about Chet Holmgren on the podcast, and he's definitely not Chet Holmgren yet, but, you know, in terms of being that 7 foot guy with some perimeter skills, he definitely showed that.
Awesome. And he's up to 225 now. So he's put on some weight.
There you go.
Over the last few months, he's gained
weight since we started this podcast.
He'll be at the 270 before you know it.
That's right. Depending on how long we talk tonight, he might actually get there tonight. All right, guys. So what else has happened on the national scene that you feel like may have some ripple effects with UNC, whether it's guys that Carolina's already got an offer out to, whether it's maybe some guys that, you know, Carolina was waiting to see who developed and they committed elsewhere? Is there anything on the national scene that you feel like maybe will have some, you know, later on down the line, or affects North Carolina right now, Shrill?
Down the line, I could see Paolo Banchero picking Duke as something that impacts UNC, mainly because they're considered the favorite for Patrick Baldwin already, mm-hmm. and they already have A.J. Griffin, who was teammates with R.J. Davis in high school, committed. And so if you assume they get those three, I think it's going to be very hard for someone like Caleb Houston, one of UNC's top targets in 2021, a reclass from 2022, plays kind of a small forward, maybe be able to do some four, but I think more of a wing. It'd be hard, I think, for him to go there with all three of those guys already there, because they're kind of all the same player. I think Banchero maybe is a little more post-oriented, but they all have a lot of similarities in how they play. So I think that could be a benefit for UNC moving down the line. And then with Kenny Chandler picking Tennessee, obviously Kentucky is out of it with him. So you saw the offer, as Sean mentioned, go out to Hunter Salas. So I think those two things impacted Carolina, because I don't want to say that Carolina had a breakaway lead or anything, but I think they are in a good spot with Salas. And there aren't many schools who could come in and catch UNC from behind, but one of the probably two who could do it is Kentucky. So
sure.
I think that is something to monitor, those two things.
So that's good feedback. Sean, you got anybody that you feel like may have some ripple effects that would affect either UNC's current recruiting efforts or something maybe down the line?
I mean, I think, you know, going back to Salas in terms of what's going to help him make the decision? Is it somehow getting to campus, or is it doing, you know, some more virtual visits? So I think, you know, right now we'd be talking about Labor Day weekend coming up, and, you know, who's
game,
the first?
Yeah.
You know, so who's the recruiting class coming in? So, you know, but even looking through the 2021 class, it's not like there's a lot of guys in that top 30 or 40 that all of a sudden you say, oh, you know, Carol, I think, you know, he'll get an offer pretty soon, because, you know, a lot of them are committing, as Sherelle mentioned, and some of them are, you know, other guys are just not fits. I mean, you can probably go through the top 15 and pick a handful that will go to the G League. You know, whether or not that happens this year is I think will be interesting to see. So I don't think any true ripple effects. It's just, to me, interesting to see the progression of the offers when they're coming. You know, I think we all thought Brizzy might get an offer, or some of these other guys, and, you know, UNC just didn't want to pull the trigger. So we'll see how those guys turn out. But once again, they want to be very sure on who they're offering, and they're not Arizona or Kansas where they just throw out offers to everybody and then see how things shake out. So they're being very selective. It'll be very interesting just to see, you know, as the next two or three offers, if it's 2022, 2021, you know, how they're expanding the mix.
Yeah, the last 2021 offer was, I think, to DeMarco Dunn, right? And that was in May. So they've had a chance to evaluate these guys. They've watched, you know, some of the tournaments, the pop-up events that have been going on. They've watched those via live stream. You know, I'm sure they've watched so much AAU film and high school film, and the only offers they've given out
since Jabari Smith.
They would have offered him before, though. You know, that one doesn't matter. Jabari Smith, but
different class. Yeah,
But the point is, like, since everything happened, Hunter Salas and DeMarco Dunn are the only ones who they've offered who wasn't kind of a slam dunk offer. Like you said a year ago, like last July, you're like, they're going to offer Jabari Smith. It's just a matter of when. So we knew that was coming at some point. Even Salas, we kind of had an idea. I think Dunn was the only one that really caught us off guard. We thought they would talk to him, but maybe not go straight into an offer. So to me, A, either shows confidence in your roster, confidence in where you are with your current targets, or just a complete lack of I can't even think of the word. Lack of enthusiasm for the 2021 class, and maybe it's all three. I don't know, but it is surprising. I thought there would be a few more offers in 2021.
Well, I think just speaking of how few offers there are, you know, if we did have an actual AAU season, and you go, you know, the 2 weeks in the spring, and then all July, and once again, you have those guys that are gonna break out. I mean, right now we're watching Donovan Mitchell drop 50 points a game in the NBA playoffs, and I remember Rob Harrington in Vegas, you know, just, you know, hoping that UNC was going to, you know, turn their heads and watch him play on one of the other courts there. So, I mean, you have so many guys that, you know, and it's probably harder to break out in these smaller, you know, AAU tournaments where either the live feeds aren't good or the competition isn't great. So I don't know. It's kind of crazy that there have been so few offers, but I guess that just speaks to what we're in right now.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bull & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bull & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
The fact that things are just so weird right now with how, you know, the staff is evaluating the availability to even see guys, like you guys mentioned, you're watching, you know, maybe a stream from a dimly lit gym that has four teams in it as opposed to the typical tournament size. With all that stuff playing, you know, kind of against everybody, right? Yeah, all the schools are having to deal with it. Do you guys have any feel of any of the players that are out on this landscape that may be coming to a close in their, you know, in their recruitment? And I'm not asking you guys to predict, you know, this is not something we do on the show. We predict who's going to commit where. But do you guys get a sense, and Sean, I'll go to you first. Do you get a sense of any of these players that might be winding down their process anytime soon?
It's a tough one. I mean, I think in terms of the guys UNC is after, I would probably lean Ingram if I had to pick any. And that's only just because he did a lot of his due diligence during his junior season, getting out to a lot of the campuses. So he's already seen much more than most other people have. And he, you know, he's down his list. So, you know, if he's not going to wait until the spring to see who else is around, you know, I could see him committing. I mean, obviously probably the soonest of the guys, but once again, we've seen other ones all of a sudden just kind of announce their signing date out of the blue. But I would say Ingram, just because he did all his visits, or not all of his visits, but he got out a lot early on.
Sherelle, you feel about the same, or is there anybody that you feel that could be a potential domino to fall anytime soon? And again, I'm not asking you to prognosticate where anybody's going to go.
Yeah, I agree with Sean. I think Ingram is up there. He took multiple visits. I think we all talk about him because it seems like Carolina has no shot. I think Trevor Keels is probably close to a decision. For the same reason, you know, he lives in a pretty good radius where he can drive to schools and visit schools. And he's got teammates or former AAU teammates at Villanova. He's got friends at Virginia. He's got a former AAU teammate at Duke. So he kind of has an idea about the schools. And I'm sure he's talking to those guys and trying to get feedback. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's there. And I wouldn't be surprised if DeMarco Dunn, I think he's probably nearing the end too, because for someone like him, I think visits would have been really important, just because, you know, a year ago, frankly, no one knew who he was from a national level. So I think visits would have been really important for him. He probably would have enjoyed kind of being the guy and being talked up, and, you know, and he's a kid, so he would have enjoyed it. But since that's not going to happen, and it looks like visits aren't going to happen anytime soon, I could see him just picking from his top seven, picking his school and just getting over with. So I would say Dunn and Keels are probably pretty close. And I think Ingram's pretty close too. And I don't think Salas is far away either, even though he just released a top 12. Just from talking to people around him, I don't get the impression that they want it to linger. And
did Bacot do that, though? Didn't he drop like a six and then like a week later he committed or something?
He did. It was like August 4th or something. He dropped. And the list was so – it was like Oklahoma State and Duke and Carolina and a couple other schools I can't remember. And we're like, okay, so he'll do that and then he'll take official visits. And then, you know, maybe the day before he committed, we kind of got the tip that it was coming and, you know, committed to UNC. So a lot of guys do that where – they put out a list and then before you know the recruitment's over. Cause it's one thing to say, hey, I want to enjoy the process and get through it all. But think about it, Joey, if you have a top six, there are three or four coaches from each school calling you. So that's 24 people. And then there are for each one of those schools, there's at least one reporter. So that's 30 people. Some places probably have two reporters. So that's called 34. So you've got 34 to 40 people texting and calling and trying to get info from you every day. That gets grating and old.
I'm sure.
I think a lot of times guys want to write it out, but they just get sick of it and say, okay, I know where I'm going. And they just go ahead and announce a decision.
Look, man, I got three other people within this house that always want information from me. I don't want to answer them. So I have no idea how 30 to 40 would look.
Right.
One more question before we start trying to wind the show down. For our listeners and for our viewers, this is so weird because, to put into context, a lot of these players, most of their development, and guys, correct me if I'm wrong, but most of the development happens during that junior to senior year of AAU ball. That's when most of their offers come in, correct? Like, isn't that where most of the development happens, that last year before they're seniors in high school?
I think,
yeah, I mean, unless you're that top, top 10, 15, five-star guy. Definitely. So once again, there's the guy, this we've talked about a few times, but the schools that are doing their due diligence and know how to, pick them out, they're going to be able to find the guys that are 50 or below that end up turning into, early starters or really, true impact players. So, especially the guys right now, it's challenging both for the players and the coaches.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's not – people think, well, oh, they're just playing AAU and they play three games a weekend or whatever. But, this is a collection of talent between the three circuits. And especially on EYBL, it's consolidated the entire country's basketball talent that's, in high school, and they play against each other. So, you have that. And then you have – if you're good enough, if you're, a top 50 maybe type kid – you get to go to USA, which is a whole nother level of competition.
Yeah.
And then if you're in that same group, depending upon which circuit you're on, you get to go to Steph Curry's camp, or you get to go to Nike Skills Academy, or you get to go to whatever Adidas has, I guess like James Harden or Lillard camp or something. You get to go to those things and you test yourself. I mean, it's one thing to score like 40 points, at Douglas Byrd against Pine Forest, but it's a completely other thing, to shine in these AAU tournaments. And I think people just don't grasp the level of competition that these guys are playing. I mean, so many of these guys are going to be in the NBA that you watch it on the EYBL. It doesn't seem like it at the time because they're in high school, but in two or three years, they're going to be in the NBA. And I think missing that level of competition just hurts everyone.
I think it's important that you guys shared that because, as long as our listeners are hearing this, and COVID and the pandemic is different for everybody, but it really does affect how these guys develop, in addition to how they're getting their offers and how teams are throwing offers out to a kid and how the recruiting process just looks. So there's a lot of stuff if you're thinking that, well, gosh, why hasn't Roy and his staff offered this guy, or why aren't they high on this kid? It's just because this is so different and you're not even getting to see kids during their most developmental phase, I guess, for lack of a better classification for that.
One quick thing to add. I mean, this year would have been the U17s. I don't think I was at the last one, but have been to a few of the U17 tryouts. And, you can't ask for a better competitive environment than that, where I remember, I guess it was, I'm dating myself now, but 2014, and you had several lottery picks get cut, first cut, second cut from that U17 team. And you had other guys that, maybe they had played well in EYBL and were starting to do well, and they just, took it to another level, going against the best. And you miss that this year. And then you most likely will miss my other favorite event in October, the USA Developmental Camp, where you have two gyms, 80 guys across all four classes. going against each other. I doubt that'll take place, but I don't know. Maybe there's some hope for that. But
bubble hope, again, man. Bubble hope.
Once again, that's, you know, those are, you know, that and Peach Jam. I mean, those are very, very high level quality events that everybody won't get to play in.
Yeah. So as we head towards the finish line here, I want to give you guys a chance to kind of mention anything that you feel may be coming down the pike, whether it's potential offers. You know, I know rankings aren't really going to evolve because there's no ball being played, but any other kind of forecasting that you might see. Sherrill, I'll go to you first. And this could also include any content you're getting ready to throw up on Inside Carolina in the next, I don't know, 24 to 48 hours.
Well, we hope to talk to Dylan Anderson soon about the UNC offer and just learn more about his game, because it's frustrating for me, for Sean, for Ben, for the basketball staff, because we just can't get out and really watch players. And, you know, if you pay $45 for a feed and you can't watch anything, then I'm sure that's a little more frustrating as well. So there's no way to – all these guys who are getting offers in 2022 especially, they would have been on our watch list, you know, over the summer, because, you know, that's our chance to kind of ingratiate ourselves into AU season, really watch kids multiple times and kind of get a feel for the game. So that's frustrating. Anyway, you asked me what's coming. So that is coming. And then, you know, I'm just curious to see 2022. We just don't have a great beat on, to be honest, because of what I just mentioned. So who knows who might get offered in the next week or so. You know, it just depends on who, you know, Roy decides to call and say you've got a UNC offer. And we have an idea of maybe, you know, 10 to 15 guys who it might be. But this year is just so different. We don't know when it's coming. Usually we have a good feel for it. But this year is just everything's kind of out of order.
Sean, anybody that Rail may have glossed over in the not going to happen category?
I don't think he glossed over anybody. I think in terms of stuff coming out, the recruiting board will be updated with Dylan Anderson by the time this podcast is out. And then the fit will be coming back for the class of 2022. So I know only four guys right now, but trying to watch a little bit more of them in both their high school and AAU settings before doing that, which will be in a little bit of a different style than the 2021, since you're now projecting another year out. But, you know, as Sherrill mentioned, you know, I mentioned the 2014 U17 tryouts, and, you know, going into that, I could probably recite everybody's scouting report and everybody's go-to move just because I'd seen them so many times in AAU play or high school. And now you have, you know, these 2022 guys where you're just trying to watch highlight clips, and everybody, you know, once you watch a highlight clip and then you watch the full game tape, and you're like, wait a minute, you know, where is half of this stuff? So it's challenging, but once again, excited to kind of start doing those, and I'm sure there'll be more to come as offers keep rolling out.
And I'm going to say one thing, and I just want to keep beating this drum, and I'm going to beat it until, you know, there's basketball again. But if you're an evaluator and you're looking at someone in 2022, the last time they played a meaningful game where, like, you know, that's not in a dimly lit gym, that's not against, like, you know, that's not against the Westover All-Stars or whatever. Like,
man, you hate some Mid-South teams right now.
I'm trying to get everybody from Cumberland County in here. The last time they saw him was in March. So assume, you know, that things kind of stay where they are, and maybe there's not the season doesn't start until January, February, like the North Carolina High School Athletics Association is doing. You're missing a year of film and video and evaluation on these guys. And like you said, I mean, 10 to 12th grade, like, young guys are changing like crazy there. I mean, Anthony Davis grew, what was it, 8 or 9 inches between his 10th and 11th grade year. So a guy that you might have liked, you know, last March is going to be completely different when you see him in January. And that is hard for evaluators, especially when you have to make offers and there maybe are people closer to you that you've seen who you need to make a decision on. That's just, that is going to be a big problem. I really believe that if games don't start getting played soon.
It's like getting wasted trying to make a flambe, I guess. You got no idea how it's going to turn out. Yeah. Look, guys, as usual, you know, you two have brought the heat. I mean, just even when there's no you know, this isn't a typical August on the recruiting show. You guys are still bringing knowledge and information for our listeners and our subscribers, and we appreciate it. And speaking of subscribers, I want to remind everybody who's watching or listening, if you are not currently an Inside Carolina Premium subscriber, make that change, please. Michael Jackson said it best, make that change. Go ahead and subscribe. Get all the goodness that Rail and Sean were talking about that's going to come out the next couple of days. Access the recruiting board, seeing new articles when they come out. Make sure you subscribe to the Inside Carolina podcast. If you like what we're doing, rate us, give us a high review. If you don't like what we're doing, give us a heads up. Say, hey, this could be fixed. We appreciate it. We want to know that we're providing good content for our subscribers. And also want to just give a couple more special thanks to Johnny T-Shirt for sponsoring the show. Make sure you hit them up. Get your cool Argyle mask. Get your new Jumpman gear. It still looks like, fingers crossed, we're going to have some football. Hey, don't be the guy sitting at your house watching in a jersey from 1986. Go ahead and hook yourself up. They got all the Jumpman, all the Nike, all the new stuff. You name it. Johnny T-Shirt's got it. JohnnyT-Shirt.com. I also want to give a big shout-out to John Siegley for producing. And that's all we got. Boys, anything else before we roll credits?
Looking forward to seeing what the next 2 weeks brings.
All right.
Westover played really well last year, so let's go E.E. Smith All-Stars instead.
E.E. Smith All-Stars, I hear you.
There we go.
All right, for Sherelle McMillan, Sean Moran, I'm Joey Powell. We'll hit you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.